Welcome to Elton and John's La Liga Weekly. Terry and John would like you to refer to our previous podcast. Just listen to that. The same stuff happens every time Spain plays. Anyway, that's not actually true, is it? Because Morata actually scored before he missed his sitter this time. So it was a bit different, wasn't it? But essentially, Luis Enrique is right about everything and the results are wrong. That's the way around it is with Spain. We'll have a look at everything from the second set of matches in the Euros. We're recording this before the Italy-Wales game in the afternoon. So we don't know what happens in that, but congratulations to Scotland for winning the World Cup. Hang on. Just check the table. It must be wrong, Terry, because obviously Scotland are the best football team in the world, aren't they? And everyone was dancing in the street. It says here they're at the bottom of the group and they haven't scored a goal. But anyway, must be something wrong with the table. Just past halfway in the Euros, by the way, we'll find out tonight who will be in La Liga next season. And the Premier League fixtures are out, by the way. But, you know, anyway, we'll find out tonight whether it'll be Girona or Rayo Vallecano. So we haven't seen that yet. We'll catch up with that when we next do a podcast later in the week. Thank you to all the Patreons who are keeping us in business. So patreon.com/eltel, and then you can join in and we'll do some Patreon stuff as well. What I might do is drop the price for the summer. So have a look in the next couple of days. I'm away at the moment. And so when I get back, I will get in front of my proper computer and do it there. The Patreons at the moment who are watching the video will notice they are denied what they come here for. They can't see me. All they can see is my name written on a screen. The video is not working, but Terry's there and looking resplendent. And Terry enjoying the intensity of the tournament so far. Not necessarily enjoying all the detail of the punditry, though, ladies and gentlemen.
It's part of my irritation with the new language of football. Someone just sent me a tweet. Tony Jones, a colleague of ours, sent me a tweet with a link to Peter Reid. Now, I know we're a couple of old dinosaurs. I get that. But it's perfect, his description of it. He goes through all the new lingo that people have in football now, and he refers to it as in the, you know, what he used to describe it as when he was playing, when he's managers, and when he was a manager, and it's perfect. It just sums it up. But the reason I was irritated by that was I wanted more detail than just people repeating that word intensity in analysis after a game. And it was Scotland had it, England didn't. And they just kept repeating it. And I don't want to criticise too much about the commentaries and the pundits, but I'm going to in this episode. But that was England, Scotland. And I just thought they could have been more specific in terms of saying why Scotland. For example, I think Scotland had a better work ethic, a better attitude. You know, they were more enthusiastic. They were an underdog. And that can help sometimes, to raise your game. But in saying that, it wasn't just an underdog performance because they, for large spells of the game, matched and outplayed England. So there had to be a reason why England, you know, weren't as good as they should have been, despite having on paper the bigger names, the better players. And I just wanted more analysis than just people repeating the word intensity. And intensity, you know, it can mean a whole set of different things. As I mentioned on Twitter, I did get abuse from some people. I wasn't referring to that the game in general. It was nothing to do with the game. It was about the analysis. And for those people that did complain that I thought I weren't giving Scotland any credit, I did later on. I thought they were terrific. And not just, as I said, an underdog performance. They played well. They played good football. They had a good plan. They looked better coached than England, certainly more motivated than England. And they played some good football. Their problem is finding the back of the net, as I think is the issue for quite a few teams in this competition, which leads you to wonder, you know, if you have got a striker that's amongst the goals on a regular basis in this competition, or strikers, that are amongst the goals, or you're a team that creates more chances, that's going to give you a better chance of being successful in this competition. So it's been an interesting competition so far. No clear favourites, I would suggest, at the moment. And, you know, one or two disappointing performances, of which I'm pretty sure we're going to discuss in detail the performance of Spain. So
let me just do my my random observation at the moment, because I've been in Scotland. So I went to Hampden for the Croatia Czech Republic game. I just wanted to see a game, so you know, and they were selling tickets for that, and you get in as an occasion. It's I mean, I love going to football. I was there with my mates and everything. Who, you know, we go to these big tournaments as often as we can. It was a couple of bits of it to moan about. Were one, they told you to get there really early. There's only a few thousand in Hampden Park. It's a big old stadium.
Yeah.
So they get you there ages beforehand. So you're like an hour and a half before. Obviously, when we're commentating, we're there early, aren't we? Because there's stuff to do. But when you're just a fan, there's nothing to do. And couldn't have a drink, and there was no food. So they give you, what? There was free water, like a marathon, you know, like when you run past at the marathon. So you could go and get a water if you wanted to. But then the music was so, it was like ear-splittingly loud music. So you could, and then they make you sit four seats apart.
You got no chance of talking.
And a mask on. So basically, it's like, so it's like, oh, this is rock and roll. It's like you and me. It's like, no, sit over there. It's like you're in the doghouse. And obviously, we were in the sort of the nearer the Croatia fans, and they have just ignored it in the end. And they sort of came together and sang a few songs and stuff. But it obviously doesn't have the intensity. Now,
that was in Leicester Square.
Yes, yeah. But then you look at the Hungary games, and I suppose from the COVID, from the health public itself, you're thinking, those people are in the social distance, they're like standing on each other. Those people, aren't they?
It was full capacity, wasn't it?
Seems to be about 90,000 in a 60,000 stadium, doesn't it?
They're all,
only half of whom are wearing clothes. So,
and the French have travelled. The confusion amongst everything there is ridiculous. I've been asked to go to Barcelona for a day to do some work on either the 31st of June or the 1st of July.
Right. Okay.
And it's to do with a promotional, recording some promotional stuff for next season. And because I'll be there a day, I don't need, because I've had both my jabs, I can fly to Barcelona. That getting into Spain isn't an issue. Having my two jabs is enough now. But I have to get a test before I go or when I'm there to get back into England the next day.
Oh, right, OK. So you can have a test in England and then fly to Spain and meet a load of Spanish people and fly back on the English test that you did before you went.
Yes.
Right.
And because I'm going for work, I don't have to isolate.
Right.
So if I'm going for work, I'm immune.
Right, yes. But if you finish work and then you go to the hotel bar with a couple of friends for a drink?
I'll go to the beach.
Yeah. Then, right. All perfectly clear.
I think I've got it completely clear now, yes.
Yes.
But anyway, when you see in these countries, you know, Spain was similar to England, wasn't it? The game in Seville, the crowd is sparse. When you see it in Hungary, it's like watching a different sport with a full crowd.
It's like going back in time or something, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it was marvellous. I know Griezmann actually said, we've got to get used to playing in a full-up stadium again, which I kind of get, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't know what it's like. I never played. It was like playing reserve. I imagine it's like playing a reserve game week in, week out for a whole year. You know, not even that, because at a reserve game, you might have had 1,000 or a couple of thousand people in, you know, something like that, that came in to watch a game. To have nobody in the stadium apart from the people involved in the match for a whole year and then to suddenly go and play in front of 60,000 it will take some getting used to again. I know it's something they've done all their life, but
like to switch from... tennis players, you know, can't hit a tennis ball with a bat. Because someone made a noise. Everyone has to sit in sort of library silence during a test match.
So it's good to see that slowly but surely all around we do seem to be getting back to normal. And I'm hopeful that next season we're going to see crowds in the stadiums on a regular basis and we can get our lives back to normal and now, you know, liberty back to where it was 15, 16, 17 months ago.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Anyway, let's shall we start with Spain first? Because this is a La Liga weekly podcast.
Revved up.
So Oh, it was a different kind of game, actually. I was being slightly disingenuous because Poland didn't sit as deep as Sweden did. They weren't quite as anti-football, were they? They pressed on Spain.
Second half, they took
the game to them at times in that one. They've obviously got an outstanding striker, Lewandowski, who was always the potential threat that he could score a goal. You put him in a shirt at the other end of the pitch and Spain would be a much better team. Don't want to dump it all on Morata because he scored the goal. Spain are frustrating again, aren't they? And you know, 2 points from two games, that they've got to do better against Slovakia, or they're going out.
Yeah, I think we have to put this into context because we're not getting any context on television at all. Yeah. And the context is the manager has picked an absolute diabolical squad of players. So I think he's letting the country down, because when I see that squad and those teams representing Spanish football, I think they're being massively let down because of the players that he's picked, the players he's failed to pick, players that are not even in the squad. And I just think it gives a poor reflection on the Spanish national team, because I have no understanding of what he's doing. It's almost like it's a preparation tournament for 2, 3, 4 years down the line. I'm flabbergasted at what's happened, because this squad and team isn't the best that Spain can offer. It really isn't. And I'm baffled as to why someone would go into a big tournament, a major tournament, with a squad of players that isn't, I don't think, sufficient to represent Spanish football in the way that it should be. I feel that strongly about it, to be honest.
So we looked at the squad beforehand and we asked lots of questions. I think that analysis, I think, stands up, that we questioned it. That I remember asking you about what's the plan, because he seems to be in the middle of making a plan. As you say, we're now two games into the major tournament and we still don't quite know. He's been consistent with his team selection in this, but it's not obvious looking in to say why. What are you hoping to achieve with this? So looking at the players who aren't here, the choices that he's made, knowing what we know now with a couple of games down the line, who's missing?
Picked an alternative team, John, from players that are not in the squad or he hasn't used in this tournament. Now, I will cheat on a couple of 2 or 3 players that I would still prefer to use. My alternative, and this is based on, if you're an opposing team now and you look at Spain, you're not looking at that team and thinking this is a team to be feared, because they haven't got the personalities, they haven't got the leaders, they're not named players. You know, you look at them and you're probably thinking, take care of Dani Olmo, Ferran Torres, he's a young player at Man City, Morata, Moreno, we know them, Pedri's a youngster from Barcelona, Pau Torres and Laporte, I'd go into the reason why that's a disaster, that position as well. Yeah, we've got Marcus Llorente, he's pretty good, he plays for Atletico Madrid, but he's playing right back. Alba, perhaps not as good as he once was, I think Gaia should be playing. And so there's lots of reasons. The goalkeeper, he's plucked one out of thin air and sticking with him. No criticism of Unai Simon in this competition so far. But my alternative team is based on the fact that if you were playing this against this group of players, the majority of them, the opposition would look at them with respect and fear still. And there are, importantly, leaders in this group that I've picked, where there isn't a leader in the team at the moment. Yeah. You know, so this my alternative team from players that he hasn't used, that might they might be in the squad, is De Gea in goal. I would go Jesus Navas, Albiol, Ramos and Gaia. Bonucci and Chiellini are the same age as Ramos and Albiol. And if I was playing against that, I'd go Gaia, because I think he's been better than Alba this season, but he's not being picked for this competition. He is in the squad. De Gea is in the squad, of course, but not being used. I'm cheating with Busquets because he's only just come back from the positive COVID test. I would have gone with Busquets. You could go with Busquets, Sal and Thiago. So straight away, you look at a midfield three and you're thinking, well, we know Busquets, we know Sal, he's pretty good. He's been a regular for the years at Atletico Madrid. Thiago's at Liverpool. These are named players that the opposition would look at and think, yeah, they demand respect. You know, we're going to have to be on our toes today. Up front, it was slightly difficult, if I'm being honest, because I would still include Morata. Mm-hmm. I know he's got his critics. I don't think there's anybody better than Morata at the moment. to represent Spain up front. His goal record in international football, despite missing chances, is good. I thought he led the line well against Poland, to be honest. I thought he worked hard. He made runs in behind. He'll get criticism because of the miss from the rebound from the penalty. He's actually getting more criticism than Moreno, who missed the penalty. I don't think it would have been allowed, even if he'd scored.
No, he was in the D, wasn't he? Yeah,
he was in the D, so it wouldn't have been allowed. And it was a difficult week. He got in the right place. He was the one anticipating. He was the one following up. It came back at him really quick. He missed the chance, but it wouldn't have been allowed. So I think overall his performance was pretty good. I'd like to still include Moreno as well. I think Morata and Moreno would be the ideal two up front. And then I would have Marcus Llorente involved in the front three. But in bearing in mind Moreno and Morata in the squad, I would have gone for Marco Asensio, Aspas, and someone like the other wide player was quite awkward, to be honest, to find a right footer that can play wide if you want to play him on the left or you want to play him on the right, because Asensio is a left-footer, Aspas is a left-footer. I went for Paul Tuitt, Real Sociedad, because right, I think he would give that drive and energy in an attacking position. But ideally, I would have gone with, you know, Moreno, Morata and Llorente as my front three. So you're filling that team with players that the opposition know. You've got Ramos, who's the leader. You've got Albiol, who's a leader as well. De Gea commands respect. I know he gets his critics as well. He is an easy target at Manchester United. He has made mistakes, but I still think he demands respect. And I think, you know, if you fit it with the midfield with a Busquets, a Sal, Thiago, maybe Pedri, or maybe cheat and go with Pedri over Thiago. But I just think the setup is so wrong. When you look at the Spain team you're playing, it's Dani Olmo, and it might be Ferran Torres, and you've got Koke and Rodri holding in midfield, and it's, you know, Aymeric Laporte, who didn't play for Spain until this tournament, playing alongside Pau Torres, I'm not being massively critical of him. But I just think if you know, the people are moaning that Spain haven't got the players that they used to have. Yeah, of course, but they've still got some good players. And I know people might say Albiol, Ramos and Navas, they're all in their 30s. It's for this tournament. It's 2 weeks of football, 3 weeks if you're lucky. You're not looking at, you know, that's further down the line, finding those replacements. And it may well be Laporte, it may well be Pau Torres, it may be Inigo Martinez. But for this tournament, I think when you play to Spain now, teams like Poland and Sweden are facing them and thinking they're not playing well, and they haven't got the big name players from the Real Madrids, the Atletico Madrids, Barcelona's, Liverpool's that they have done in the past. So I just think and the substitutions he made, I know I'm rambling, I'm getting it off my chest, and the substitutions he made when you're chasing a win and you end up without a striker, you take off Moreno and Morata and you're putting on a series of wingers that are not playing up front. It was just the last 20 minutes when they needed to show the urgency to get a winning goal. Players had no idea what they were playing. They had no idea what they were doing. And it looked amateur out to me. It really did. Sarabia is another example. Why not Traore in that situation? Why Sarabia and bring another player on that? And you're taking off Moreno, you're taking off Morata. There was no, he didn't dare to do anything different. It was, I'm actually really annoyed about it, to be honest, because I don't think it's a fair reflection of the players that Spain could play. And I don't think we're getting that context in the commentaries. So I know I said I didn't want to moan about the commentators and co-commentators. I don't think that is a context. People were saying it last night, well, they haven't got a Ramos anymore. Well, they could have.
Yeah, literally, you know? Got Ramos. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, they could have. And Albiol was called up to the when we had the COVID situation. How good has Albiol been in the last couple of years? How good was he against Manchester United? So for this tournament, why not, you know, why is he not involved? Risk a French player that was trying to play for France and at the last minute got called into the squad? So Rabiot's a last minute call-up where Luis Enrique's never picked him before. And now he's picking him to come off the bench to change the game, and in both games so far.
That's the random thing, isn't it? Is that because you can make a case for Albiol not going, is that he hasn't been playing under Luis Enrique. But then, as you say, Sarabia is playing and he hasn't played under Luis Enrique. It's just, it's scattergun, isn't it?
Exactly.
An explanation of one thing defies the explanation of another thing that he's doing. You think, so if you're doing that, why are you doing that? And it just seems to be almost a series of almost random decisions. And he's renowned for his stubbornness, which when things are going well, it can be a good quality. But basically...
Why he only made one change last night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Moreno coming in for Ferran Torres.
Yeah.
That was the only change. It was as if to say, no, I got it right. Maybe I'll give you this one. That the grief he was getting for not including Moreno instead of Morata, that was the grief. He decided to play them both, which is fine. I had no issue. I was making that point pre-match in a couple of interviews I did, that you could play them both and still play the 4-3-3 because Gerard Moreno can play on the right. I think Dani Olmo stays far too wide on the left. I don't think the full Marcus Llorente is a complete waste of a player and a complete waste of time playing Llorente at right back.
Yeah, he just never played there in his career. That's what another thing that the context when people are watching it on, you know, terrestrial TV, they're probably thinking, he's all right, that bloke. But is one, how good he has been for Atleti. And secondly, that he's just not a right back. And
exactly.
You can't just think, oh, he's got the qualities of a right back. We'll make him a right back and start his career like this. I mean, yep. He played a few games there for Atleti this season, didn't he, when Trippier was injured, but so suspended.
Maybe as a wing back as well.
Yeah, but it doesn't make him a right back, does it? Yeah.
No. Yeah. And the reason I picked Navas over Carvajal is injured and has been for most of the season. So all those players I picked for my alternative team are fit.
So here's the question, Terry. Is it salvageable now? I mean, you know, we've got Slovakia to come in Seville. You know, it's a ludicrous question to ask in a way. Of course, Spain should be.
But I think also we have to bear in mind and I'm not making any excuses because you can see, according to this podcast, I'm giving Luis Enrique a lot of criticism. The pitch is a joke, an absolute joke that Spain are playing on. By far the worst pitch that's in the competition. The players complained, the manager complained. It's not a top-class football stadium. It's not a genuine football pitch. It's the traditional grass that we've seen in the past. I know people are going to wonder, what on earth is he talking about? But it's not, they could have, you know, played it. I understand why it's moved from Bilbao. I kind of understand.
Yeah.
And Betis or Sevilla's stadium would have been a proper football pitch. That is a multi-purpose piece of grass.
Yeah, they've been used all season.
The ball didn't move quicker.
Yeah, which in the past, before you had this grand science that pitch design, pitch maintenance has become, you'd have been seeing, you know, at the end of a season, it's good to have a new pitch and all of that, but it's not anymore, is it? Football, top-level football clubs know how to look after their grass now, don't they? And these guys,
a lot of it is even grass now.
Yeah.
It's that scientific.
Yeah.
And players are used to playing on that. So to play on an old-fashioned, normal, just pure grass does make it. The passing, you could see it. I mean, I heard the excuses from the first game, in which I didn't notice the pitch. I heard the excuses and then looked last night and there was, you know, when the players are passing it, the ball is taking slower to get to the, you know, you have to put a bit more power and a bit more pace onto each pass. And that's not always possible. And I just thought it does help the opposition in the fact that it's a slow pitch, basically. That's what I'm trying to say, instead of being slick and quick, like the plastic grass mixture combination pitches that everybody else has now.
So what can he do? What's the plan
about the grass? Slovakia?
No, about the grass. The grass is gone.
Do you know what? I have no idea what he will do. What could he do? I think the Rodri and Koke one doesn't work. I think they're two really good players, but they both play holding midfield. If you look at the goals scored this season, if you look at the goals they generally score, it's not a lot. And I think they do need, you know, to rely on 18-year-old Pedri to be your sole creator. To have Dani Olmo playing wide on the left, blocking the space for Jordi Alba on most occasions, if I'm being honest. I looked at the average playing positions and Jordi Alba's is nowhere near advanced enough for Spain. So the fullbacks have to push on more. What could he do? He could put Azpilicueta at right back and play Marcos Llorente further forward. He could bring in another creative attacking midfielder. I think Moreno and Morata definitely have to start as the two of the front three. I can't see him being radical and changing to a front two. I'm not sure that's needed because I think Moreno does come in and play off the wing, doesn't he? And gives a little bit more support to Morata, which I think in turn made Morata play better in that game last night. I'm not saying he's brilliant, but he's not as bad as people make out. And, you know, as I said, his goal scoring record is pretty good. But I think they need to address the left side of attack. What's wrong with Oyarzabal? Why has he been relegated? I mean, that's his position, wide on the left, and scores goals from the left side. So he might be someone that he considers bringing in. It's I don't, as you say, I couldn't really guess what he's going to do. This goes back, I think, to they beat Germany 6-0. Yeah. And the front three was Morata, Olmo, Ferran Torres, who got a hat-trick. It was one of those games where every shot went in, wasn't it? Spain were brilliant, but that was the front three. Rodri and Koke played in midfield together in that game. It was Canales instead of Pedri that played. So he's kind of gone... He's at that result where they beat Germany 6-0, and he's kind of... That's set in stone now that Rodri and Koke, because they did it that night, and because the front three played well and scored goals, that was, without realising it, because we didn't know his plan. But now looking back, it seems that's what he's gone, you know, his plan has always been to make sure, you know, to have faith in the team that beat Germany 6-0. The back four was completely different. But I think that's where this plan of Enrique stems from, that one result against Germany. And that's what he's going to stick with. So the 4-3-3 will stay. I don't know, you know, I don't think he will make many changes at the back. They haven't been weak defensively because they haven't been really tested and they won't be tested. This will be another game where they're going to dominate possession. They had 500 more passes than Poland did in this game. But at the end of it, they failed to create an abundance of chances. Morata's getting criticism for missing the rebound from the penalty. He scored the goal. Moreno missed the penalty. There was one or two goal mouth scrambles. That was it. So somehow he's got to find a way that he can, with all this possession, be a bit more daring, get more players into the box, make more forward runs. The whole team needs to quicken up the passing. And, you know, with the group of players he's got in the squad, I'm finding it hard to see how he can make a drastic change. They might qualify. I'm actually not convinced they will. I think they might struggle to win and you know, end up with three draws.
I think we'll leave Spain there for now and we'll find out, won't we, Wednesday, isn't it, against Slovakia. So we'll be back after that to unpick that. And let's have a look at the rest of what's going on then around the Euros. So, Terry, what have you made of Memphis Depay playing so far for Netherlands? Obviously, Barcelona's new man.
I think he's a player that drops deep, isn't he, for the Netherlands? Mm-hmm. His partner, Weghorst.
Yep,
he's the focal point of the attack. Do Barcelona need one of those players that drops deep off the front again? I understand why Koeman wants him. Memphis Depay, and this is the same as the Spain players. Good is a good player. All the Spain players are good players. I'm not slaughtering them as individuals. I'm having a go at the manager for picking the wrong players, but they're all good players. Memphis Depay undoubtedly is a good player. Is he a position that Barcelona need fulfilling? No, definitely not. So I'm baffled as to why Koeman's gone all out. I understand that he's a Bosman, he's a free transfer. Having signed Aguero, if you play Aguero as the main focal point of the attack, because he doesn't like dropping off deep, get involved in the play, then where do you play Memphis Depay? Because Messi's there, if he's there. If Messi goes, that's a different issue, but I don't think he will leave. So then you've got Griezmann, then you've got Braithwaite, you've got Ansu Fati coming back, you've got Dembele. I've got a lot of respect for Memphis Depay, but but I just don't think he is what Barcelona needed in terms of importance to improve their squad for next season, which does need improving from last year.
So they've got to sell somebody, haven't they?
You'd think so. I mean, Dembele will be a concern. I mean, every now and then you think he's either going to be a star for Barcelona or sell him. You know, someone's going to come in.
Well, he came on and went off. Came on and went off, injured, didn't he?
And he was holding his hamstring again. That's, and then every now and then that's going to flare up and people are going to go, oh, you know, but he's got a year left on his contract. So I guess Griezmann, Braithwaite, you know, Ansu Fati isn't going to be sold because there's no need and because he's been injured for a long time. They will have to move players on. I still think, my opinion, central defence needs sorting out. If you allow one or two midfield players to leave, then that needs sorting out as well. So at the moment, you know, the Aguero signing is interesting. It's 50-50 which way it works, which way that goes. Worth the gamble, I think, in a free transfer. Memphis Depay, I think he's got quality, but I'm not sure he's the position needed. So they do need some more, you know, they've signed Eric Garcia, but we're not going to see in this competition. And going back to Luis Enrique, there's two players missing from the squad that he could have picked. He's gone short, so he doesn't have to leave players out. So another criticism of Luis Enrique. But I just think with Eric Garcia coming in, I still see Pique, Araujo, Longley ahead of him. They need to strengthen the starting 11. So I have an open mind on Memphis Depay, not in terms of his quality, it's just where he's going to fit in the starting lineup of Barcelona.
Yeah, just looks a bit of a signing without a plan.
Yes, I mean, Busquets played well second half of the season. I know it went unnoticed. I know that the general fashion is to criticise him. He was superb in the second half of the season, but they do need to replace Busquets. And it isn't Frankie de Jong. He isn't Busquets. He's a different player. So somewhere along the line, they need to start trying to find someone long-term who's going to be replacing Busquets. Hopefully, and there are one or two names of younger players at the club that the club think can do it. Can they do it next season? Well, we saw the emergence of Pedri and Elex Moriba. So hopefully, you know, they have got one or two more young players called Fati. Hopefully, you know, praying he comes back soon. So perhaps they're going to do it from the younger ranks. But like Araujo as well was another one. So I think there are more important areas of the team that Barcelona need to strengthen before bringing in another number 10, which is what Depay is.
I think we've got more English people listening than any other group. So let's do a bit of England as well, Terry. Obviously, I mean, I think I said this the other day, didn't I? The ludicrous swinging that we get in the coverage of England. So you get a narrow win in a relatively boring game against Croatia and, hey, England, your Southgate's a genius, England. And then you play another game a few days later and you get a goalless draw in which, you know, you hit the post that, you know, the stone's head had gone inside the post. The analysis is totally different. It's the analysis in major tournaments swings wildly around. It wasn't a good performance by England, was it? But you know, give us a bit of perspective on how they've looked.
Well, we go too high and too low, don't we? We're never in the middle, and it's, you know, you often hear people say about managers, you know, there are managers that are like that. There are managers that keep things on an even keel, and that's probably what we should do. Four points from the first two games leaves us in good shape. We will qualify for the knockout stages. Do I think England are going to win it? No, I don't. I look at the team, I look at the squad, and I compared it the other night, and I looked, and they showed one or two old faces. I'm thinking, if England didn't win it with Rio Ferdinand, Ashley Cole, Steven Gerrard, Paul Scholes, David Beckham, and players like that, this group of players ain't going to win a competition. I hate to be as brutally honest as that. I don't see the superstars, not particularly seeing a particular plan from Gareth Southgate. So I think we probably jumped the gun. We always do. Before the tournament, we're always going to win it. It's coming home. After the first game against Croatia, who were not particularly good, I have to be honest, and I didn't think that after the first game. I did mention after the first game that we did get carried away. And then we've hit rock bottom because of the draw against Scotland. So I think there's an even keel. Depending on the draw, England could make the last eight, I think. But I think when they come up against one of the genuine good teams, then we might struggle. But, you know, a struggle sometimes isn't the worst thing in the world. To go into a game, if we were to play France or Germany, Portugal in that round, we'll be, you know, I hope we would approach it as a nation as underdogs, and that puts a different slant on it. I don't think that'd be the case, though. If we do play one of those big teams, the media in this country would expect England still to beat them. And if we don't, then it'll be a disaster. Then the players get criticism, Southgate get criticism, and the whole thing comes, you know, piling down until the next tournament, when we go through the whole mood change again in the build-up to the World Cup. So we have to be realistic. I don't think England have the players in general to win this competition, because I see other squads, other teams with better players and playing better football.
Now, I've said this before about major tournaments, because I think generally what happens is that whoever wins it, we then reverse engineer the story of the narrative onto them, that they were always the best team throughout it, whereas quite a lot of the time a team wins it that wasn't the best team. So in the spirit of that, well, we're just about halfway through today. I would say so far that the teams I've liked most are France and Italy.
Yes.
I thought then Germany were terrific against Portugal. I've enjoyed other teams. You know, I think there are other good teams in the tournament, but...
Belgium. Belgium, mate. How different was their game when they put on Witsel, De Bruyne, Eden Hazard? That was ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, De Bruyne in particular changed that game, didn't it? Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah. So I think those four, you know, is that... You know, is that right?
Yeah, I think there are other good teams, but I don't see them
come through and win it.
I don't see the Netherlands winning it. They've been good to watch so far. There will be an underdog that maybe gets a favourable draw that are hard to beat, hard to break down, get a bit of confidence. Yeah, that sort of thing can happen. But I think when we come to the crunch at the end of it, I thought Germany were off decent against France as well, I have to be honest. And I looked at that game and I thought, I won't be surprised this is the final.
Yeah.
Because... France, I think, are really good. Hungary have been excellent. They're probably not going to qualify, but they've been excellent, backed by that crowd we were talking about. And, you know, well-coached. They are a really well-coached team and with a great attitude. So there are going to be teams in it that surprise us. Depends, of course, who comes out the group. Wales got to the last four in the last European Championship. So if you get that head of steam up, you get that confidence, there will be a surprise or two. But I think when it comes down to genuine winners, Italy, I agree with you. I like the fact they're scoring goals. Lukaku is a goal scorer for Belgium, and probably one or two others will emerge as the competition goes on. France, I have a question mark over Benzema. Yeah. Whether it should be Giroud. I actually think with Benzema, the three of them, Griezmann and Mbappe and Benzema, rotate too much. Benzema is completely different to Giroud. Benzema is fluid, he'll drop deep, he'll go wide, they all swap positions. And I actually think France missed the traditional Giroud centre-forward, backing into defenders, holding the ball up, focal point at the centre of attack, and letting Mbappe and Griezmann move around him. So I think that'd be interesting to see how that emerges as, you know, France go on in the tournament. And you're right, Germany, I think, were different class against Portugal. Really good.
With wing-backs really pushed high.
Probably the performance of the competition so far, I would say. And Italy, you know, have been scoring goals, and, you know, people say they haven't got the quality, the experience when they come up against the big teams. Please don't write Italy off. That would be foolish. You know, with the mood they're in, the determination they're showing, the quality they've got, the goals, you know, they are amongst the goals. They're on a fantastic run of form. Italy can win it. So I disagree with those pundits that said they'll come up short. They may well do, but I don't think that's an obvious conclusion to make based on the fact they didn't qualify for the last World Cup, and they're not the famous names that we've seen from Italian teams in the past. Mancini's got them playing really well, they're good to watch. So that narrative of the traditional Italian teams, which has not been there for 20 years, You know, is this time we're seeing a team that's scoring goals, and everybody's quite happy to say, oh, actually, the Italians are good to watch. So Italy can win it, France, Belgium, Germany. I think that's it, to be honest. Have I missed anyone out? Netherlands are decent.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, with the rider that stuff happens.
Yes, exactly.
It's a football tournament. It's a short tournament. Yeah. But yeah, yeah.
We so don't know if you're the draw. At a team, they could end up playing each other. And there could be a week half of the draw and Sweden getting the final.
Yeah, and Croatia got to the final of the World Cup on the basis of two penalty shootouts and beating England.
Yes.
You know, it happens. But, you know, if it comes the end of the tournament, everybody, you can remind us, you know, if at the end of the tournament, Terry and I are saying Switzerland's the best football team we've ever seen in our lives and we always knew it, then feel free to come back at us. Right, so we can't really do this one, Terry, because the game is Sunday evening. So I think just a quick nod that Girona and Rayo Vallecano are playing the second leg of the Segunda playoff. And that's madness, isn't it? It's 20th of June, isn't it? So it's not as bad as previous years.
It's been a week between the legs.
Yeah.
I looked for the second leg for Wednesday. So I'm surprised it was another week. It doesn't give the teams an amount of time, does it? But in saying that, John, teams through it, not just in Spain, I'm talking particularly in the Premier League, we've still got three teams in the Premier League that ain't got a manager yet. You know, they're looking at signing players. So, you know, it's not ideal, but there is time to address it if you're Rayo or Girona. If you do get promoted, how you know, sort your squad out for next season. But it's not ideal for them to be playing this late in the day. But I will watch it because the European Championship games are on at 5 o'clock. I think that's a presuming 8 o'clock kickoff, 9 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah.
So I have a look at that tonight and see the drama unfold in the second leg. I think Girona probably our favourites now, aren't they, to go through? And there's quite a few familiar faces, but not that many. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. They're probably in a better position because of the assistance from Manchester City if they do go up, as opposed to Rio. But anything can happen in that game.
Yeah, you're saying all this now. Half the people, in fact, the majority of the people listening to this will know the score before. as they're listening to it.
Yeah.
So there we are. Yes, bound to be 7-0 to Rio Vallecano. Anyway, right. Well, Terry, enjoy the football that's coming up over the next week. We will see, won't we? We'll find out whether Spain are going out, and then, boy, there will be some repercussions, won't they, in Spain if they don't get through against Slovakia. And so we'll be back. We'll be looking at more of the Euros, and we'll find out who the 20th team in La Liga is when we next podcast. So we'll see you for that. Don't forget to join us on Patreon if you can. Patreon.com/LTelfer, supporting the podcast. See you all soon. Bye-bye.